Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years, signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see $600,000
deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor." Every check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. Is who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven, the radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So, if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
The only two things in life that make it worth living is guitars tuned good and firm feeling women. I don't need my name in the marquee lights. I got my song and I got you with me tonight. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Luke and Mark, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs, Newberry's train songs, and Blue Eyes crying in the rain. Out in Luke and Bach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. So baby, let's sell your diamond ring, buy some boots and faded jeans and go away. This coat and tie is choking me, and in your high society you cry all day. We've been so busy keeping up with the Joneses, four car garage, and we're still building on. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Luke and Bach, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs, Newberry's train songs, and Blue Eyes crying in the rain. Out in Luke and Bach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. Let's go to Luke and Bach, Texas, Willie and Waylon and boys. This successful life we're living's got us feuding like the Hatfields and the McCoys. Between the Hank Williams pain song and Jerry Jeff train song, Eyes crying in the rain. Out in Luke and Bach, Texas, there ain't nobody feeling no pain.
Hey everyone, Sam Ovens here, and today I have Danielle Leslie on with us. And Danielle's got an awesome story. And she started a few years ago working at Udemy, which is like an online course company. And she was helping online course sellers to get more customers and generate more money using the Udemy platform. And she got started there, and then later on she decided to start her own business helping people start their first online course. So really helping people who have some experience or like a really good story or things that they've learned from that they can teach other people to help them in their own lives, and helping them really take that knowledge and turn it into an online course that they can sell and generate money doing it. And Danielle's been pretty successful with this. She, within her first 2 years of doing this, she was making $130,000 per month. And then Danielle joined Consulting Accelerator and then Quantum Mastermind. And then very quickly, she was able to get to about $250,000 per month. And then in January this year, you had a month where you made, what, $850,000?
Yeah, $830,000.
So those are some pretty awesome numbers in a pretty short amount of time. And on today's interview, we're going to discuss how that happened and really dig into some of the details so that you can learn from Danielle's experience. So thanks for jumping on with me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So let's go back to Udemy days. You're sitting there and you're helping these online course sellers. Why did you decide to leave and really start your own thing?
Yeah. So it's interesting because by the time I got to Udemy, I had already actually tried creating – well, I had already created and launched my own course in 2012 just on my own. So I had my first kind of launch just on my own, doing a live version, basically what I teach today. And when I reached the ceiling with that, that's when I joined Udemy to kind of like level up. So at Udemy, I got to kind of, I guess, learn more. And I learned that actually you can create a course on any topic. And I learned that you don't need an audience to be successful with it. And so in all of that experience, I learned that, you know what, I know that like this is my purpose. I love working with people of different backgrounds. And so after Udemy, because by that time that was my third online course I created while I was at Udemy, it just got the attention of another startup. And so I left after about 3 years and worked for another startup. And so the reason I ended up starting my own business was by accident. I got laid off from that other startup in fall of 2015. So when that happened, I thought I would just go out and get another marketing director job at another startup. But I had friends reaching out to me and saying, hey, can I hire you to consult me? Like our company is launching their first course. Can you come on and show me how to market to small business owners? Can you help me launch my course and help me with this ebook? So in the first 30 days, I made over $10,000 just from people in my network who I'd been kind of advising and giving advice to over the years. And that's kind of where it grew from there.
Got it. So the piece of advice that they were seeking from you, and it seems like what your expertise is getting that first course built and created and out the door.
Yeah, back then, that's what I was really good at. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, and it was really leveraging like my background in startups, right? It's like I co-founded a startup in 2010, and one of the big things I learned was that the best way to get things out of the door, make an impact in this world, is to ask yourself, how can I solve my customers' problems with no tech? Like, no tech necessary. What is the fastest way from A to B? How do I get this out into the world? And so, yeah, so that's how I started with building my courses. Like, my first course launch was, like, no tech. And then, yeah, that was kind of, like, my method that I started teaching people.
And by no tech, do you mean, like, no writing code?
Yeah.
Because we still need a computer, right?
I know. I consider like a computer, not no tech. But yes, all you need is like an internet connection. So how can I teach my course live, right? That was the first version of my course, is teaching it live over, I think I used like Google Hangout. So yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, no sales page, none of those software platforms, things like that.
Got it, that makes sense. And when you first started teaching people how to do this, like they came to you, how did they know that you knew how to help them?
Yeah, so it was based on the little information that I was putting out on my Facebook page. So ever since, you know, probably 2010, when we co-founded that startup, it's like I was tweeting back when Twitter was a thing for me. You know, so it was just me sharing these breadcrumbs along my whole career, just saying, oh, now I'm working at Udemy, so excited to be helping people do this. And then after that, it was, oh, now I'm helping this client. It was really all those breadcrumbs I left on my personal Facebook page, you know, just sharing my knowledge in real time. And because of that, and because of in-person interactions, people would come to me and say, hey, I've got this issue. What do you think? Those are the reasons people knew I could help them. And it was a lot of imperfect stuff. So one of the, you know, the job I got at Udemy was because they saw these, like, wacky YouTube videos I used to do, like, back in the day that looked terrible, that my sister would shoot for me in the backyard when I had to move in with my mom when I was broke. But it's like leaving those little, you know, breadcrumbs online showed people, oh, she actually knows what she's talking about. So, yeah, so that was really it.
Got it. And how did you sell this to them? Like, because at that time you probably didn't have a course set up for this and pricing and a whole business built around it. Like, how did you approach that?
Yeah. So I started with consulting. So yeah, first it was just selling over the phone, sending people to, an invoice over FreshBooks. And then over time I developed, you know, my framework. I would walk each consulting client through, and it was 6 months later after I had lost my job, and I'd worked with a number of clients by then, and that's when I said, okay, I'm ready to actually turn this into a course. that more than one person can take it at a time. So I actually launched into it by accident. I was kind of forced into it because a friend of mine was putting on a women's conference, and she said, will you MC at the last minute? Her MC, I think, dropped out or something. It was 4 days before the conference. I MC'd the conference, and I just ended up sharing a lot about how you monetize your personal brand, and just sharing, you know, different things I learned. And through that, the women at the conference said, who is that girl, Danielle? Can she, like, give us more information? Like, can she do some kind of presentation for us? Because I didn't speak at the conference. And so my friend said, can you do, like, a webinar or something? And I was like, okay. So that's really how I pre-sold the first version of Course from Scratch. It was, like, July 2016. I was forced into doing this webinar. So I said, all right, screw it. At the end of the webinar, I will pitch Course from Scratch. So that was it. I did the webinar, followed the template, pitched it at the end, and I made $8,000 in 7 days, like from those people from the conference. And so that's how it got going. If it was up to me, I probably would have waited 3 more years to launch it. But yeah, that was kind of the first version.
Got it. And you spoke at this event, and you pitched this course that didn't yet exist, right?
Right.
So you're pitching the concept of it, thinking that if no one buys it, I won't build it. If people buy it, I'll build it.
Yep.
Then they buy it. And how much money of it did you sell again?
$8,000.
$8,000. How much was it per person?
It ranged from $1,100. And then my payment plan was, around that price point.
So roughly like 7 customers or something.
Yeah.
Got it. And then how did you approach that? Because I know a lot of people think, well, I have to build the entire thing before I sell it. But then you went and sold it without doing anything. Obviously, you couldn't immediately give people a login right there at the event because there would be nothing. So tell me how you approached that.
Yeah. So, and just to be clear, so I did it. It was a webinar, that I sold it at the event. So after that, first of all, I didn't even have the name of the course. I called it a completely different name. So I sold it, and then I was like, oh shit, this is real. So let me try to continue selling it. So I actually made that the beginning of my first big launch under my own personal brand. So I told those students, hold tight, and I just let them know the course is starting September 1st. And that was it. And then I went out and I said, okay. And I hired, I found like a Facebook ads person to just set everything up for me. I did all the audience and targeting research for her, wrote some copy. She set things up for me. So I spent a little bit of money. I spent like $1,400 on Facebook ads and then made $4,200 in immediate revenue from just the Facebook ads. And then the rest of it, what did I do? The rest of it was just family, friends, organic posting and things like that. So when it was all said and done, I spent about 60 days total from webinar people, Facebook ads people, organic stuff. So over 60 days, ended up doing a 20K launch. And by that time, still had no course content, no nothing created. So when I finally ended the sales period, I said, okay, everyone, it's starting in 2 weeks. And then I had to go back and say, okay, everyone, I need 2 more weeks. And so finally, day one, I opened it up. And I only had week one created. So I created it in real time. I dripped the content. So I just created some slides, did voiceovers for just week one, uploaded it to Teachable, and then sent everyone the login and was like, okay, guys, week one is up. And then while they were taking week one, I was in the lab creating week two. So I just created it week by week. So by the end of the 8-week program, the whole course was created.
Got it. And so when you were doing the pitch on the webinar and saying, buy this thing, did you say it's going to be ready in 7 days or 10 days or because you couldn't give them immediate access, right?
No, I think I gave them a month. I said in September. I think I said in August, but it ended up being September. But yeah, I was in August. It'll be ready.
And what was your reason for that? Like, how did you explain that to them?
Oh, no explanation needed. I just said that's when the program starts.
Got it. Oh, because you were doing it kind of live with them the first time anyway.
Yeah. I mean, they watched the pre-recorded videos, and then we did live coaching calls. But yeah, on the webinar, I just let them know the program starts. The phrasing was just like the program starts August. 2016. So it sounded, you know, official.
Got it. Yeah, and that's helpful for people listening that you don't have to build the whole thing before you sell it. And actually, it's pretty dangerous to do that on your first time around because chances are you've got it wrong.
Yes. And the only reason I recorded videos was because I had already worked with so many course creators before, and I'd already worked with a lot of people one-on-one. And so I knew the framework, and I at least had some case studies like, oh, my method does get results. So yeah, otherwise I actually, yeah, you should just do it live with no, you know, no pre-recorded stuff. But yeah, I pre-recorded because I'd already had some case studies.
Got it. And so you pre-sold it, you got those customers, you took a month to put it together, and then you started going through and releasing 1 week at a time with the customers live, and they would watch the pre-recorded videos, and then you would hold like live group coaching calls?
Yes.
And that was once a week?
Yeah.
And how long was the program in total?
8 weeks.
Got it. And why'd you choose that?
When I worked with private clients, we always ended up working with a 60-day launch cycle. So I just made the course 8 weeks as well.
Got it. Oh, because that was before you were used to running evergreen things. You would do them live, like, yeah.
Yeah, like one cohort at a time, yeah.
Yeah, I remember
That's
those days when I did that.
I know. Yeah.
I remember when I used to do that and someone even just mentioned the idea of something just for sale all the time. I was like, no way. This person's like hallucinating or something. There's no way you can do that.
I know. People think it's not scalable. They're like, how are you going to scale that? Like, how is that even possible? How are they still going to get amazing results? Yeah.
Yeah. It's real interesting. You think that people, the thing that's getting the people results is the fact that it's live, or like that everyone in the group is in the exact same week as they go through. Like all of these things, which turn out to be not even really helpful.
No.
It actually helps to mix things up. So like there's people who have finished the course a year ago that are in the same group as people who are on day one of the course.
Yes. That I'm seeing that effect in the group and in my group now, and it's amazing. Yeah. You learn so much from other people at different levels.
Yeah, well otherwise it's like, you know, if you've got 100 people who don't know what's going on at all together, how are they going to help each other?
Right.
Mm.
Yeah.
Got it. So you sold that, and what happened next?
And then I went into hibernation. So I sold that. That was 2016. So it was fall 2016. Finished with the cohort. The students got okay results. I wasn't blown away by their results. And so I was like, oh, great. So I went in hibernation because I was just afraid to launch again. Like I was just getting in my own way. I was like, there's no way I'm going to have this success again. I don't know what I'm doing. Last time I had the conference to help me launch, I don't know. So I took like 6 months off to kind of just be like, what am I going to do? And then what I decided was, okay, let me just go back to my roots and do an MVC and do the minimum viable course, do a live version. So in January of 2017, I called it the Start Your Course Bootcamp. And I was like, let me just go back to ground zero. I'll get 5 people enrolled. I will walk them through, you know, once a week. And I asked myself, how can I reduce what I teach into a 4-week program and get them even better results than I did the last time? So that's what I did. And I just used, you know, Instagram. I put up a few, you know, posts, got 5 or 4 people to pay me $500 each for this Start Your Course Bootcamp. And then I taught them. And it was so much better. It was more succinct. And what I did is I overcomplicated the process for the first group. So when I did the first version of Course from Scratch, it was way over their head. It was for a more advanced group. And I didn't realize, no, we have to take it back to the beginning. So that's what I did with the Start Your Course Bootcamp. And so therefore, they got way better results. And so after completing that, I said, okay, now I'm ready to go back out. Although I still took several months to go back out and you know, sell it again. But I ended up selling it again like maybe 6 months later. And that's when I introduced like webinars and started doing like the weekly webinar later that year.
Got it. So a couple of things. The first one is you said you weren't impressed with the results. How were you defining and measuring results?
So that was one of the problems. So I had my list of markers that I was measuring them off of. So I don't even remember what the milestones were back then, but I'm pretty sure it was something around building your audience, like a number that they had to build it to, and I showed them how to do that. I honestly don't even remember what the milestones were, but I know that they were poorly chosen milestones that were not appropriate for my students' level. And then so what I taught them could teach them how to do those things, but they didn't even have the foundational, already have an audience or already have marketing abilities to get to those markers. So now I've like refined it where, we have very clear 6 milestones and they are designed for anyone, like homeboy off the street who has no idea about marketing and sales can come in and achieve every milestone. And it's very clear. So now, there's a clear measurement for whether you succeeded or not.
Got it. And what things did you have in the first version that was too complicated that you didn't have in the second version?
So the first one, let's see. I think the first one I had them doing for list building, I had them create a freebie. I had them doing, I think, a video series. Basically everything I did for my launch, I had them doing those things. So I was like, you should create a freebie. You should do a free video series. I probably had the webinar in there too, but didn't go into depth about it. But those were the big things that threw people off. When I asked for feedback, what happened? They're like, I didn't know how to set the freebie up. Like, you've got to do a squeeze page and design it and figure out MailChimp, ConvertKit, all this crazy stuff. And so that's when, for the Start Your Course Bootcamp, I scrapped it. And I was like, screw that. You're going to text people. You're going to go on Facebook. You're going to private message people. That's how you're going to build this list on a spreadsheet, Google Sheet. Like, there's no need for an email service provider or a sales page or freebie or anything like that. You're just going to ask people if they want to join your list.
Got it. So you really just stripped out a lot of the weight and complexity and made it as lean as possible.
Yeah, I really asked myself, how can they get the same result with low to no tech? Yeah.
Got it. And that's very helpful for people listening because often we want to teach people these cool, fancy things, but the most important thing is the result. And if they could get... I always think the way we can make our programs better is if we improve the probability of them achieving the result. So like 100% success rate, right? That would be perfection. And not only that, but improve the level of the success. So, you know, every 100% of people who take the course is a billionaire, right? That would be like high on that. And then reduce the time frame. So instead of 8 weeks or whatever, like instantly, 1 millisecond, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the other variable is effort. So people don't want to put in much effort. And so then you've got to, you know, it could be all of this work and then you can condense it down to without doing anything. So how to be a billionaire instantly without...
Okay. Tapping in on our audio. Today's podcast is titled Everyone is Born Knowing Nothing. Everyone is born knowing nothing. And I'm reading from the program notes that I've put here, stimulate thought or conversation if you guys want to join in. Here on Blog Talk Radio, just looking at a scrolling marquee, and I've got some program notes written out already, so I'll be reading from that. Once again, today's podcast is titled Everyone is Born Knowing Nothing, and I'm sure this is a topic that we'll go into several times for the balance of this year, all into next year. Okay, everybody is born knowing nothing, and let's start off with, because the Olympics are coming up in Paris, future, not present, but future, or even present ones, future Olympian or future Olympic track stars are born not knowing how to run. Just like everybody listening to this podcast, you were born not knowing how to run, not knowing how to crawl, not even knowing how to pull yourself up. Running is a learned skill. We take it for granted. No, we do it. We see wildlife do it. Dogs, cats do it. But running is a learned skill. Now, let's get with the fundamentals now, because when you're learning, you need to learn the fundamentals of any topic first. So let's look at the skills involved with running. Number one, as we popped out of that womb, we have to learn, because when we're sitting there pooping and peeing on ourselves, you know, we can at least turn our eyes and our head, you know, left and right. So I would say the first skill is observation. So we take this for granted, but observation. Oh, wait a minute. This person is walking. We don't even know what the walking is, but we can see it. And then this person's walking a little bit faster, and then this person moves real fast. Later on down the line, we'll learn that it's what they're doing is running. Okay. So observation, you know, we'll see what's going on. That's a skill. Observation is a skill that most people take for granted. Next thing is, all right, well, man, I want to walk and run too. All right. Well, in order to do that, hold it, you got to learn how to control your body. So that's skill number two, learning how to control your body. And by the way, I'm not, this is in no particular official order. I'm just going off the top of my head. So observation skill number one, learn how to control your body is skill number two. Okay, skill number three, all right, you have to learn how to sit up. Skill number three. Skill number four, all right, and I might skip something in here, but you can call me on it. You know, how to stand up. So, man, let me stand up like the big people are. And the first few times you do that, you might fall. But if you can stand up for 15 seconds, that might be a big deal. And then stand up for 30 seconds and the whole minute, then I can stand up as long as I want. So we're what, four skills? Skill five, taking that first step. I took the first step and fell. I'm crying, I'm frustrated because I can't do what the other people are doing. All right. Not knowing, because once again, we're born knowing nothing, not realizing that everybody else ahead of him had to go through the same thing. So skill five, you know, step. I mean, you can stand up, you can take a step, and then all right, you take two steps, three steps, four steps, fall. Well, okay, wait a minute. All I need to do is pick myself up. That might be another skill, picking yourself up. Okay. Because sitting there crying all day is not going to help it any. All right. I need to, the sooner I can stop crying and playing the victim and stand up, it'll be better. So, you know, we're up to skill six or seven. Let's say six. All right. And then I can move a little bit, you know, I can walk faster, you know. And then I can run. Now, there's been a lot of falling in this whole process. There's been a lot of self, another skill, self-motivating yourself to get up after you have fallen down. Okay, you haven't failed. You've just fallen down. All right, you busted your lip. You hit your head. You maybe knocked yourself unconscious. That's what happened to me. I got knocked unconscious. My mother had to rush me to the hospital. But you come over that, then you can run. Now, part of that is, once again, you got to learn how to control your body. Then you figure, oh, wait a minute, I'm watching TV and I'm seeing, you know, you do your little neighborhood foot races. When I was growing up, we were doing foot races in the alley. And people, when you go to school and you get to a certain grade, I don't know, seventh grade, sixth grade, whatever it might be, go out for the track team. And let's say you got cut and you really wanted to make that track team. Well, then you find out that other people who got real good at track, they got coaches, the teachers, that taught them how to run. And then within that, how to run, how to breathe. You know, what are you eating? Nutrition. You know, these are different skills in the making of an Olympic athlete who started off just like everyone else on the planet, not knowing how to run. Well, this applies to, I would say, practically everything in life. So running is a learned skill. All right, now, next, you know, future professional athletes, doesn't matter what the sport is, basketball, football, soccer, volleyball, all professional athletes are born not knowing how to play their sport. LeBron James was not born with a basketball in his hand. He had to go through the same process of learning how to walk, run, and all that I just went through. You know, I don't know, that's 7 to 10 skills. Before we even get to the basketball, then he had to learn how to shoot. He had to learn how to shoot different shots, the foul shot, the hook shot, shooting from different angles. I've just rattled off 4 skills just with shooting already. And I, you know, then when he started, there was a 3-point goal with the ABA, American Basketball Association. How to shoot threes. That's 5 shooting skills right there. All right. Then how to jump shoot, set shot, foul shots. We're up to 8 shooting skills right there. And not only for LeBron, that's anybody. All right. He had to also learn how to pass. There are different types of passes. You know, the fundamental chest pass, bounce pass, baseball pass, behind the back pass, between the legs pass. You know, he had to learn those. And while he's learning all these skills to go within one skill, collectively, his IQ or basketball IQ increases. Anything that you, if you don't know anything about a particular topic and your IQ was low or zero, the more you learn, starting with the fundamentals, and because once again, everything is a learned skill. And then the era that he grew up in, where there was no YouTube at the time, and let me give a background on YouTube. The Chinese, all right, YouTube as we know, because a lot of us learn on YouTube, including myself, you know, a whole bunch of YouTube University. The concept of YouTube, of videos and you know, watching stuff, and learning stuff on your phone and computer, all that. That was being done in China before there was a YouTube, before there was a Windows 95 or a fax machine in your home, the Chinese, they set up a number of what they call radio and television or radio TV universities. They're just like the universities that we have here today in the United States and Europe and even in China. But what they would do is they would be teaching people remotely in different parts of China. If you couldn't come into the classroom, this is going back to the 60s, if not before, even in the 50s, it was definitely in the 60s. So before he was born, China was doing, and I don't know where the guys who got, maybe they took a trip, but they were doing YouTube nationwide. Well, the concept of using mass communication, radio and television in China back in the 60s and probably even the 50s. Now, I'm saying all this to say this with the LeBron story and anything else, learn is a learned skill, because I'm sure he was watching and learning on how professional players and college players, how they play their game. He was watching games, live games, just like you can go online right now. You can watch live, name it, it's live, somewhere on the internet, or on demand. Now, when he was coming up, unless he had, and he didn't have access to a tape machine back then, until we got to the, I guess, 80s? Yeah, 80s. Where you can get a VCR, or I forgot the other thing, what was called, and you can, you know, record a game and play it back as many times as you want, videotape, VHS, or whatever it might be. Because I know in college we had tape machine, but it wasn't like the ones in the 80s, but it was pretty user-friendly. But nobody had it in their dorm rooms or athletic departments. Probably some academic departments and TV stations had them back then, and probably a handful of radio stations. But in any event, so he was learning by watching televised games. Telecommunication was one of my college professors, Dr. Paul Matney, education, telecommunication. So he learned a lot that way as well. But so professional athletes pick the sport. They had to learn multiple skills, you know, to get to where they are. Billionaires, Steve Jobs, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, Bob Johnson, BET, Steeler Johnson, his ex-wife, BET, and Washington Mystics, Mark Zuckerberg. None of these people were born with a computer in their hand. None of these people popped out of their mother's womb with a PhD in whatever they make their billions in. All these people, the common denominator is they popped out of that womb knowing nothing. You can say, well, they knew how to poop and pee. Well, not really. Their body was reacting to a biological need, and they really didn't know how to control their bowels at that time. So, as we all do, pooped and peed until we learned the skill of toilet training. Oh, wait a minute. My body is telling me you need to go poop and pee. That's a learned skill. We take it for granted, but it's a learned skill. It's part of the fundamentals of living for everybody. So out of 8 billion people on the planet, there are less than 3,000 billionaires. Here's the thing. Now, this is if you want to become a billionaire. Only if. Because this, what we're getting to today is anything that you want to learn or anything that you need to learn, you can learn. Matter of fact, if you got a problem, it could be a financial problem. It could be a relationship problem, because there are all kinds of problems, as we all know. When you have a problem that you just know, you done prayed over it and everything, and it's just not, it's not, nothing's happening for you, that's a clear sign that says you need to learn something. You need to up your skill game. What skills do you need to learn to solve this problem? Or if it's somebody that you're involved with, it could be a business relationship, could be a parent child, could be anything. What skills do I need to teach this person, or do we need to learn together? Because once again, everybody is born, and that life is a constant thing of learning. From the time you come in to the time you go out, it's learning. Now, as we get older, we might think, oh, well, man, I don't want to go back to school. I'm tired of learning. No, you might be 80 years old and might have to learn something, or 90 or 95. I had an aunt, she lived to be 105. She was learning to the very end. Okay, so billionaires are born not knowing how to count money. Jeff Bezos didn't know how to count to one. He had to first understand or grasp the concept of what is one, okay, let alone one plus one equal two, before we even get into the billions. But he came in the same as all of us. All right, so counting, starting a business, baking an apple pie, making a peach cobbler, changing the tire, these are all skills that people learn. Now, if you want to earn whatever amount of money you want to earn a month, it could be $1 million a month, it could be $1,000 a month. Whatever that amount of money is, it's a learned skill. For instance, let me give a good example. In the Washington, D.C. school system, they started me off, this is back in the early 80s, they started me off at $40 a day. Then the next year, they bumped that up to $50 a day. Now I understand that these teachers get over $100, and I was a substitute teacher. All right, so let's go to $50 a day, so you show up for 20 working days. That's $1,000. Okay, and I had a college degree, and essentially, what I had learned to get that is, now I'm getting past the 4 years of college. Well, you know what? Well, the common denominator with the college and the job was classes at a certain time, get the class on time, do what the instructor, the professor says, study what the professor says, take the examination, and you should be all right. Follow instructions. So on a job, you know, to pay $1,000 a month, $50 a day, that's what I ended with, $1,000 a month, and we're concentrating on $1,000 a month as a teacher. Okay. Well, if I got through 12 years of getting up and showing up. I had 16 years of experience of getting up and showing up on time and listening to what somebody says and applying what that person says. I had 16 years, 1 through 12, and 4 years of college. All right. So for the job to substitute teaching, $50 a day, I basically had to show up on time, a little bit ahead. You got to show up before the students, obviously. Give a lesson plan, teach the lesson, and do that Monday through Friday for every week in the month. If I do that, I will pay you $50 a day. That's $1,000 a month. Okay. All right. There are you can go on YouTube for this one. There are YouTube people on, there are teachers on YouTube and other places online that are teaching all kind of topics, swimming, basketball, basket weaving, exotic dancing, auto mechanics, HVAC, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, house building, dressmaking, man, you name it. And there are teachers on YouTube that are earning guitar lessons, piano lessons. There are teachers on YouTube earning 6 and 7 figures per, some are making it per month, and some are making it per year. Some are earning 6 figures per month. A few are earning 7 figures per month. Teaching. So, once again, everything is a learned skill. So, had I known, because, you know, it's and part of this is vocabulary, which we'll get into in a moment. But had I been taught how to make 6 figures, cause let's break that down. Let's just go with the 6 figures. All right, $100,000 a month divided by 20 days, that's $5,000 a day. So while I was earning $50 a day, there were people earning $5,000 a day, even back then, in the early 80s. Well, let's just bring it down to 2024, right where we are today. So what does the person, because it's information, people. What the person who earns $5,000 a day, and it could be a YouTuber. They're teachers on YouTube that it doesn't matter what they really teach, but they have learned how to use YouTube as a teaching platform, and they're earning $5,000 a day. And if you can do that, if you can learn, the operative word is learn, develop the skill set on how to maintain and sustain that for Monday through Friday, four weeks out of the month, month after month, whatever you teach, swimming, soccer lessons, piano lessons, guitar lessons, teaching kids algebra, chemistry, physics, teaching a person how to make their own clothes, teaching people how to grow their own food, teaching people how to build a house. It doesn't matter what the topic is. What can you learn from the teacher who is earning $5,000 a day versus your, well, let's bring this up to 2024, instead of $50 a day, I don't think teachers are earning $500 a day, but they're earning, I don't know, let's put it at $200. I'm just guessing. What are they doing? And there are probably some minor distinctions. Nothing. Once again, the person who's earning $5,000 per day, actually the person who is earning the $50 to $200 a day as a teacher might be a little bit brighter or have a higher IQ than a person who's earning $5,000 per day. It's just the other one's got, learn what skills that they needed to develop to get to that. So there's basic cash flow. That's a skill set. Skill deconstruction. Of course, learning the fundamentals. Building a house requires learned skills. How to build a wall, how to build a roof, how to build a floor, how to build or install a door. Learn skills. Many skills actually. And let me put it this way: the average person that is listening to this podcast has a vocabulary of anywhere from 20,000. To 35,000 words. You might have to learn a new vocabulary. No, a little bit at a time. Doctors and lawyers are no smarter than you. They just have a vocabulary that you haven't been exposed to for an extensive period of time. But just how they learned it, you can learn. So you can extend. There's no cap on how big your vocabulary can get. Languages. There are 7,139 living languages. You might need to get a new professional vocabulary. This is all part of learning. Now, in the history of mankind so far, there have been at least 31,000 languages. You, that is listening to this podcast right now, your mind can learn 31,000 languages. If you put in the effort. Now out of that 31,000 languages, now that's in the history of mankind. Once again, currently right now, there's 7,139 living languages, and on planet Earth right now, typically half the planet uses about just 23 of those languages, but that's over 4 billion people. So here's a challenge I'm going to put out there. Learn how to say, because I say on occasion, everything starts with one. Learn how to say hello in 23 different languages. Now, what I can do is English, hello, H-E-L-L-O. In Spanish, hola, H-O-L-A. In Deutsch, which is German, hello, H-A-L-L-O, hello. In Hindi, namaste. In Mandarin, Chinese, ni hao. So I can say hello in 5 different languages, but I got to work my way up to 23. Now, the reason why I want you to do this, you pick whatever languages, learn how to, just that one word, learn how to say hello in 23 different languages, you'll be ahead of most of the planet, and you can basically, you can do that. That should boost your confidence that, once again, you can learn anything, any new skill that you want to learn. And once again, going back to income production, The amount of money that she makes is a learned skill. Once again, using the example, you have teachers out here that earn $100 a day, and you got other teachers that earn $5,000 a day, and you have other teachers that earn $50,000 a day. They're not smarter than one another. It's just what skill set does a person that's earning $50,000 a day, what are they doing versus the person that's earning $50 or $500 a day? What are they doing? What skills did they learn? Which means what do you need to learn? Okay, let's see. There are over 12,000 professions. I think that number's low. And there's definitely over 12,000 professional languages and professions yet to be invented. Anyway, if you got a challenging problem, that means you need to learn something. That means you need to pick up some new skills. Okay, that's all I got for you. 619-768-2945. Any comments on that, today's topic? Everyone is born knowing nothing.
According to 2017 tax returns in America, over 500,000 people made $1 million-a-year income. In America, 500,000 people made over $1 million-a-year income. Now, here's the kicker. Mount Everest, people say, oh, my gosh. You know, he reached the top of Mount Everest. Do you know how many people have done it out of 7 billion people? 4,000 only. Out of 326 million people in America, 500,000 people have made $1 million-a-year income. That means it's so much easier to make $1 million-a-year income than climb Mount Everest. And some people think $1 million-a-year income is such a big deal. Not anymore today in America. Now, keep this in mind. Before I get into it, I'm going to have a PDF for you, and I'm going to give you two different sides in this episode. One is going to be the logical side. I'll give you the math. The other one's going to be the emotional side, which is a part that most people struggle with. But this is a guy giving you this video, this message here. I've never lived in a house. I've always lived in an apartment. My parents got a divorce. I barely graduated from high school. I went to the U.S. Army because every counselor I had told me military is the best way for you because you can go to the Army, you can come out, be a cop or a firefighter, and you'll be set with a pension, with benefits, with all this other stuff, and you don't need to worry about everything else because schooling and success for everybody else is not going to work for somebody like you, Patrick. So I went the military route. No one in my family's ever made over six figures. We've never owned or lived in a house with a swimming pool, a backyard, nothing. We've never owned a condo that I've lived in ever, okay? So that was my life. Fast forward, the moment I figured out this formula and I trusted it, which I'm going to share with you. And by the way, this is not one of these clickbait, go on this webinar because I'm going to show you this program that for only $19.99 and you buy this program, I'm going to show you how to be a millionaire. This is free content to you, but it's going to make you millions. You'll see by the time I'm done. This formula got me a Ferrari, a Lambo, you know, Porsche, a Dawn, a Rolls Royce, a house, a 15,000 square foot. I've traveled all over the place. More importantly, family. My dad's been all over the world. I've surprised my dad and my mom in the craziest way that they couldn't even believe. And more than anything else, outside of all this other stuff, when family needed money, money's in the bank account. When I wanted to experience unique moments with people that matter to me the most, money's in the bank account. When I wanted to be able to do things when crisis happened for people in my family, I had money in the bank account. You watching this, listen to me. You will do better for the world being a millionaire than doing better for the world somebody making $30,000, $40,000 per year. You need to figure out a way how to make $1 million-a-year income because it is that important to make that kind of money today because it's free to figure out a way to do it today. And I'm going to give it to you. Now, let me get into it. Before I do, questions, thoughts, comments, comment below. And if you haven't subscribed to the number one channel on YouTube, click on the subscribe button for entrepreneurship. Once we cross 1 million subs, we're doing our first live event with all the valuetainers around the world. Make sure you click the subscribe button and join the notification squad. Okay, so let's get right into it. So there are two areas that you need to figure out in order for you to make $1 million-a-year income. One is the logical side that has to do with math. The other one has the emotional side that has to do with belief. We'll get into this, which is going to be some unique stuff you have not heard before, but let me explain the logic side. So here's the math side. When it comes down to coins, we have a half a dollar coin, 50 cents. We have a quarter, 25 cents, a dime, that's 10 cents, a nickel, that's 5 cents, and a penny, that's 1 cent, right? How many different combinations of coins makes up a dollar? Here's what I mean by it. If I have two 50 cent, half a dollar coins, that's $1. If I have four quarters, that's a dollar. If I have 10 dimes, that's a dollar. If I have 20 nickels, that's a dollar. If I have 50 pennies, two quarters, that's a dollar. How many combinations can I come up with to make up a dollar? You know what the number is? 293 different ways I can come up with a dollar. What's my point to you? To make $1 million your income, there's so many different ways they can break down the math to make $1 million your income. I'm going to give you examples on three different industries for you to say, okay, now I get it on what I need to do to make $1 million your income, because you got to know the formula on how to make $1 million your income. So let's go over here right now, Mario, together. Let's look at the first one. The first one is just sales. So pick any product that you want to sell. You don't have to. It can be insurance. It can be any product you're selling that's a $1,000 sale. So if your average commission is $1,000, how many personal sales do you need to make in a month to make $1 million your income? The number is $1,000 is your average commission sale. You need to make 83 sales, which is $83,000 per month, times 12 months, you're making roughly $1 million your income. That's if you sold everything personally. Now, you may be watching this and saying, Pat, there's no way in the world I can sell 83 of these a month. That's why you may need a team or a sales team. If you become a sales team, if that average sale that everybody sells is $1,000, if you're a sales manager and a broker, maybe the average commission by sales made by a rep to you is $250, which means $250, if the average sale to you is that the commission, you make your cut, you need 332 sales made by everybody to come up with $83,000 that becomes $1 million your income. So now, what you're solving for is what? 332 sales. How do you make 332 sales? Basic math. Either get five people that sell 66 of these products per month, either find 10 that do 33, 20 who do 16 of these, or get 40 sales rep that do 8 of these to make $1 million your income. This is any sales industry. Now let's look at real estate. Here's real estate. Say the average home you sell is $500,000. The commission that's paid to you as an agent is 6%. Your cut, the total commission is $30,000. Your cut is 70%. 70% of that $30,000 commission, because your broker keeps the 30%, that's $21,000. You need to make four of those sales per month to make $84,000 a month. Times 12 months, you'll make $1,008,000 per year. Now, you may say, well, my average home size is not $500,000. It's $250,000. No problem. You need eight sales. Well, the average home size I sell is $1 million loan. Then you need two sales. It doesn't matter. Figure out the math for yourself. If you're a broker and you have real estate agents working for you, how much total do you need to sell for you to make your 30% cut of $1 million your income? Here's what it is. If the commission is $30,000, your cut is 30%. That's $9,000 you take as a broker, which means you need 10 sales to be made. That's $90,000 for a total of $1,080,000 per year, right? So how do you break that down? Well, you need five real estate agents per month that make two sales a month for you at $500,000 to make 90 grand a month, or you need 10 real estate agents that work for you that make a sale of $500,000 per month for you to make $1,008,000 per year. The formula is there. Now, here's another one. Some of you guys that are engineers, you're on an IT firm or a consulting firm, and the average hourly is $150. This could be a law firm, this could be an IT firm, this could be a consulting firm, but the average hour that you charge, I come to you, I need you to design the software for me. You say it's going to be around 300 hours. 300 hours times $150 per hour, I'm paying you $45,000. I'm just kind of giving you a math here. And $450,000, I'm giving a math to you here, right? So if the average hour is $150, your engineer that works for you, because you sold the contract, there's a lot of people that sell these contracts who don't know anything about coding or IT, they sell the contract. If the average engineer who works for you makes $75, your cut is $75. That means you need roughly 1,100 hours in a month to make $83,000 per month to make $1 million your income. So the formula you solve for is what? 1,100 hours. So 1,100 hours divided by 4 weeks is roughly 275 hours. That's 40 hours per week with seven consultants. If you have seven consultants doing 40 hours a week of you making $75 per profit on the hour, you are making $1 million your income. Do you see what I'm showing to you here? This is the mathematical formula. By the way, this is boring, but it's exciting when you get a paper and pen and you start writing out your formula. Oh my gosh, this is all I need to do to make $1 million income. What do I need to do to make $2 million or $3 million or $5 million or $10 million? That's the pure math. It's so easy to do, but this is logic. This will not get it done. I know a lot of smart, intelligent, logical people with four-year degrees who, you know, mastered calculus, pre-calculus, who have this down, but they have problems with this next part. And by the way, this is 20% of the work. This is 80%. Let's get on to the emotion side. So here's the emotion side. On the emotion side, you have multiple different areas. Let me start off with the first one here. And this is by far the biggest challenge people have, and that is belief. In order for somebody to make this kind of money, $1 million your income, you're not going to make it if you don't believe it. So you say, well, Pat, how do I get a chance to believe this? I never, in my wildest dreams, nobody in my family made this kind of money. I've not been around people that make this kind of money. How can I make this kind of money? Here's the kicker. You need to master the art of future truth. Now, what is future truth? A lot of people have a hard time with this. Let me explain. So imagine if you have a lot of doubt. You don't believe in you, right? You're like, oh, I don't know about this. You know, this is great, but me making $1 million income, I don't know about that. Yesterday, I had 60 people here in my office, and I said, what is the big deal about making $1 million income? You should have seen some people's faces. Well, I don't really know if I'll ever make it, but it's kind of cool to dream about having a big house and the cars and the freedom and a few million in the bank account, but I don't know if it's for me. That's because they don't believe in it. That's because they don't understand the concept of future truth. Let me explain to you the future truth concept. Some of you may have never heard of future truth before. Here's what it is. If you're going to lie about you, you may as well tell a big lie to yourself over and over and over again. Now, at first, it's very difficult. Let me describe this to you before you get uncomfortable. For instance, I am going to make $1 million a year income. Now, I want you to say it. Say it to me real quick. Stop. Say it. I'm going to give you a second. Say it. I am going to make $1 million your income. Say it again. Perfect. Let me ask you, was it uncomfortable? Do you feel like you're lying to yourself, right? Sometimes people say, well, Pat, I kind of was weird. I feel like I'm lying to myself. If you say, I am amazing. I'm meant to do something big with my life. I'm the guy that's going to go out there and be the hero to my family. That's difficult for some people because they're lying. But it's a current lie, but it's not a future lie. It's a future truth. It is a current lie, but it's a future truth. You see, the more you tell a big lie to yourself over and over and over and over and over again, and eventually believe it, future truth is you're going to make $1 million your income. This is a belief system that is very difficult for most people to do because most people think every kind of lie is a bad lie. No, I'm not telling you to go lie to your wife about some things you're doing on the side or lie to your husband about what you're doing on the side. I'm telling you, tell a good lie. I'm going to make a difference in the world, and you don't believe it. But say it a million times. You're going to end up believing it. I'm meant to do something special in my life. There's no way in the world God put me on this planet to just be a regular guy. No way. The blood in here is boiling. I want to do something big with my life. This guy was put on this planet to make a difference. Say it over and over and over and over and over and over again. Convince everybody in the world. The entire time you're just trying to convince one person, and that is you. And that's the game of future truth. And for some of you that are maybe making $4,000 a month for the last 20 years, you really need to start lying to yourself. You, I'm talking to you. You really need to start this moment, start telling a lie to yourself on how special of a human being you are. Over, and don't expect anybody else to do it. For instance, when you say, honey, I wish you would have told me more nicer things. Mom, how come you don't tell me nicer things? Dad, how come you don't tell me nicer things? Don't wait on them. Start with you. Number two, perspective. Here's what I mean by perspective. Sometimes you need to make the big small. Did you notice how I started the video and what did I say? I said, according to last year's tax returns, in America, over 500,000 people made $1 million your income. I said that. Then what did I say? Total amount of people that have climbed Mount Everest is how many? 4,000. That perspective to you made the big small. You need to do that over and over and over and over and over and over. And over again until like, why am I thinking this is such a big deal to make $1 million your income? It is not because you finally got perspective. you put things in perspective, and you're over and over and over and over again making a big small, 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 until eventually you're like, oh, this is not a big deal. We're going to do this as well. Number three, question everything. Everything. When your mom and dad say something and it doesn't make any sense, why, you know, it's hard to not everybody's going to make millions. Honey, it's not us to make millions. Don't sit there and let them say it. Stop them. Listen, mom, I don't believe you. Dad, I don't want to believe you. Bro, I don't want to believe you. Dude, I'm not with you. I don't want to buy into that concept. Say it to them. Question them. Challenge them. Don't let them get away with it by saying it around you, because if you sit there and you don't question that thing, that means you bought into it. That means you believed it. You got to question the stuff you tell yourself. Stop yourself. Wait a minute. Is that even true? I don't believe you. You to yourself. I don't believe what you're saying, bro. I don't want to believe you. I'm not buying what you just said right now. Question every single thing. Why do I believe this way? Why do I think this way? Why am I wired this way? Is that thinking even right? Why do I even do this? We had a meeting last week with my staff. This is a different meeting than yesterday. Yesterday's was sales. Last week's was staff. And one of our employees, they were required, every one of them was required to read the book Principle. And if they didn't read it, some of them were going to get fired. And, you know, we had the meeting. And I know some people, this is harsh. Look, there's a few things with me. I may look like a guy on video you like and all this other stuff. Working with me on a daily basis, the expectation and standard is here. I expect you to perform. That's the reason we create an incredible environment where people love being around. But the expectation of performance is very, very high, and the pressure is very high to perform, work, and improve. If you're the same person every 3 to 6 months, you don't need to be in this company. You need to go to a different place. So I was speaking about this, and one lady said, well, you know, in this book, what I took away from this book was the fact that I think sometimes in companies, the executives need to understand that everybody's different and not everybody, you know, does this and does that. I said, ma'am, stop. I said, did you even read the book? No, I didn't read the book. I said, why is it that the first thing you got out of the book is how you can fix everybody around you instead of how you can fix you? You see, the only way your income's going to grow is by focusing all the things that you got to do on you to improve. If you fix you, everybody else around you is going to be fine, but you got to fix you. And I asked the following question. I said, here's a question for you. I said, what's the most money you've ever made in a year? Don't say it publicly. Just think about that number. What is the most money you ever made in a year? Then I said, go back 10 years ago. How much has that income changed and why? Why? Why has that income not changed that much? If 10 years ago you were making $16 an hour, 10 years later you're making $16 an hour, why is that? Why is your market, you know, value in the marketplace the same thing? Is it everybody's fault? Is it the government's fault? Is it your boss's fault, your parents' fault, your kids' fault, your spouse's fault, or your fault? Everything here comes back to you. And it's so hard to do, but you got to face the truth. You ain't going to make $1 million your income. You don't face the truth and realize the issue's right here. And the last item to cover over here, to my left, to your right, is guaranteed formula for success. If you notice, it's got a little bit of green in it, and it's got a little bit of red in it, because it's a combination of emotion and logic. It's the four things I always talk about. My guaranteed formula for success that is 100% proven for my life and other people I've taught. Outwork, outimprove, outlast, and outstrategize. Again, outwork, outimprove, outlast, outstrategize. What you're looking on the screen here, on the screen, look at those four again. What you're looking on the screen here, which of those four things that you're looking at, the outwork, outimprove, outlast, outstrategize, which of those four things do you think comes last? Meaning you'll learn the latest. It's outstrategize. Why? Because that requires a lot of experience. It's like you got to go through, like a general in a war, right? You got to go through so many different wars to learn different strategies and what works and what tactics works and what doesn't work. That's something you got to be working on, right? However, the other three, outwork. If a guy works 80 hours a week and you work 40 hours a week, you can't compete with that guy. If you yourself are reading 2, 3, 4 books a month and you're developing your mind and your competitor is not, and he only reads one or two, and you study in industry articles and all this stuff, and they're not, you know, you're studying how to recruit CEOs, CFOs, COOs, CMOs, what is the best way to stretch this $1 million investment that I got to make this happen? Who should I talk to be part of a group for mentors and CEOs group and all these? Who should I network with? What community should I be a part of? Who's the best engineers, IT firm to hire? What are these competitors doing? What are some of the guys that are not even in my market? If you start studying those industries, somebody else isn't. It's tough to compete with you. And then outlast. Some people work 80 hours a week for a year, and that's great. But they can't work 80 hours a week for 3 years. Some work 80 hours a week for 3 years. But you work 80 hours a week for 5 years. You outlasted the guy that did 3 years or 1 year. They can't compete with you because the compounding effort favors you. So these four things that you look at on the screen require one thing, and that's discipline. And the discipline part, you don't hear a lot about. That's the things people do when nobody else sees. That's when you win. Again, there's a part of this that's logical. There's a part of this that's emotional. But let me get to the last part here and wrap up the session here. So you got all these different things. Imagine this part here with you and I talking. Think about it this way. What if you, at the end of this video, what if you, watching this, you said, it makes sense. I'm going to apply some of this stuff, okay? I'm going to sit down and figure out my math. I'm going to do it, okay? And I'm going to sit down and question my beliefs. I'm going to sit down and talk about the future truth. I'm going to find a big lie and say it over and over and over again. By the way, I want you to tweet me your big lie on Twitter, at Patrick Bay David. Tweet me your big lie. And my favorite lie, I'm going to retweet a few of them. You tweet me your biggest lie, at Patrick Bay David. What is your big lie? What is your future truth? You start working on your perspective, making a big small. You start questioning everything, challenging your thinking. You face the truth. You make a game plan to outwork, outimprove, outlast, outstrategize. You start making $1 million your income. And you become one of those 500,000 people in America that make $1 million your income. You may be in another different country and you're making $1 million your income because principles are evergreen in all the countries outside of communism and socialism. What if you apply those concepts and you started improving? What if you did that? What would happen to you? What happens if you make $1 million your income? Are you better for your family? Are you better for your community? Are you better for your parents, your friends, your kids? Are you better for society? Are you better for your friends? Are you better for everybody? More importantly, are you better for you? Do you have better doctors for you? Do you live in a better community? Do you give more money to charity? Do you give more money to communities? Do you feel better about yourself? Do you wake up in the morning and once you figure out this entire formula, do you really think you can go back to being a regular person like you used to be? Do you really think you can go back and take up some of your bad habits if you make this thing a consistent thing? Now, it's easy to go back and being bad, but don't you think you're going to start living a whole different life? Is it not worth it to make a decision to do this? You see, the reality is of everybody watching this, maybe 1% of you is actually going to apply the things we talk. Maybe 1% of everybody watching is going to apply the stuff that we're talking about. Most people are just going to go boom, boom. They skipped. You went back to work or you went back to a whole different thing, and you'll say, I'm going to get back to this later on today and put a reminder, and you forget about it like everybody else does. A few of you are going to watch this, and you're going to say, stop everything. I'm taking a break. Hey, I need a break, 20-minute break, 30-minute break. Go grab it because your emotions are high. Start writing. Start asking. Write this whole formula. We're going to have a PDF below for you to get and start writing all this stuff. If that's you, I got two other videos for you to watch. One, 11 Skills of a Millionaire, 11 Skills Millionaires Master. You got to watch this one. And another one is how to really become a millionaire. Not how to make $1 million income, how to really become a millionaire. You need to watch how to really become a millionaire, and you need to watch 11 Skills Every Millionaire Masters. You do those things and go through the PDF and start applying these concepts, 2, 3, 6, 12 months from now, not only are you not going to recognize yourself, none of your friends and family is going to start recognizing yourself, and all of a sudden you're going to send me a message on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter saying, Pat, I just crossed $1 million your income. I want to ask you, how's it feel? How's it feel? Was it as hard as you thought it was going to be? It was hard, but not as hard as I thought it was going to be. And I'm making $1 million income. And by the way, I can't wait for you to do it. You, I'm talking to you, the serious one. You, I can't wait for you to do it. I can't wait for your dreams to become a reality. I can't wait for it. I cannot wait for you to experience this and tell me about it a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years from now. Anyways, you want the PDF, click on the link below. Questions, thoughts, comment below. And if you haven't subscribed to the channel, click on the subscribe button right here to my left. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye. According to 2017 tax returns in America, over 500,000 people made $1 million year income. In America, 500,000 people made over $1 million year income. Now, here's the kicker. Mount Everest, people say, oh, my gosh. You know, he reached the top of Mount Everest. Do you know how many people have done it out of 7 billion people? 4,000 only.
He is going to be locked up for a very long time. Today, the man who admitted to killing a teenager over a pair of Air Jordans learned his fate in court. And it tops our news at 5:30. The judge told 20-year-old Dante Ford that he lacked a moral compass just before sentencing to 28 to 50 years in prison.
Ford pleaded guilty to second-degree murder in the shooting death of 17-year-old Corey Harris Thomas. back in June during what was supposed to be a sale of a pair of Air Jordans. Priya Mann following the story. Priya, the victim's parents were in the courtroom, I understand.
And Karen spoke at length. Corey's parents spoke about everything they did to try to prevent their son from living this lifestyle of making a quick buck. He was enrolled in a lot of sports. He went to school in the Grosse Pointe area. But in the end, he lost his life over a pair of expensive gym shoes.
It's not a day I wish I couldn't hold them and tell them I love them.
The parents of Corey Harris Thomas spoke about their devastating loss.
And not being able to open the door and tell him to get up so he can go to school, it breaks my heart.
That was my personal. We did a lot together.
In June, the 17-year-old was shot and killed on the west side over a pair of Air Jordans. Prosecutors say 20-year-old Dante Tyrell Ford met up with the teen and his friend to buy the shoes. During the exchange, the friend and Ford pulled out weapons, and the teen was killed.
Mr. Ford took the life of someone almost the same age, and over what? A pair of Air Jordan Nikes.
Ford declined to speak at his sentencing. The victim's parents say they tried everything to prevent their son from being a victim of violence.
I thought that taking him to a suburb would avoid a situation like this because it happened to so many young men.
And Mr. Ford knew that what he was doing was wrong. He had no right at gunpoint to rob and then eventually kill someone over a pair of gym shoes.
And Ford will spend 28 to 50 years in prison. Corey's parents say they really regret allowing him to stay home from school that day. They were having a new air conditioning unit installed. Corey offered to help his dad put that air conditioning unit in their home. He would later go for this ride with his friend and Ford and never made it home. Reporting live from Frank Murphy Hall of Justice, I'm Priya Mann, Local 4.
Such a very sad story. All right, thank you, Priya.
Hey, call me Louis. This is my spot.